Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, on a Wednesday, flying solo here on this podcast. And, I was thinking about it. I was walking up the steps to my podcast room. This is like a soccer broadcast for me when I do the ESPN3, ESPN+ broadcast, except I just don't have anybody in my ear. And I won't talk much about soccer today. I will tomorrow. Some signposting, as we used to say when I was on the debate team in high school. When you tell people what you're going to do, then eventually you do it. Tomorrow, I will be broadcasting a VMI soccer match have more details on the website about that. But today we're going to talk a few things, a lot of UVA sports. We're going to start, though. I was going to start with the Nats. I'll start with ACC Network. Update their personal situation and maybe some advice for the folks out there. If you're a subscriber to any of the cable systems, particularly Comcast or Cox, I guess it is, that does not offer ACC Network, I got two ideas for you. One, if you live in what's probably a pretty limited area, honestly, but Lumos Networks it can be spotty. It can be neighborhood by neighborhood, but really between Roanoke and the Harrisonburg area, I'm included, Waynesboro area, all the way to Charlottesville. Lumos does offer really good, actually, cable services. Lots and lots of channels. Lots more channels, quite honestly. A ton more channels than Comcast offers. I'm surprised by that. I get everything I had before plus a lot more. I'm getting all the ESPNs. I get a number of Fox Sports regional networks. I get the NBA and MLB TV and the NHL, Center Ice, whatever. A lot of channels I don't watch that are sports related, tennis and, you know, kind of the fringe sports there, the golf channels and stuff like that. The DC area sports networks. Masson, of course, very important for me to be able to watch Masson. And NFL Red Zone, which are going to be important here starting this week, right? But ACC Network is why I changed from Comcast, and I'm probably not the only one. I called last Tuesday. I couldn't get an appointment to have this change done until this Tuesday. It took a whole week for the folks to come out here because of all the backlog of people who are dropping Comcast, in my area at least, people dropping Comcast, moving over to Lumos. In the meantime, so I'll recommend that if you live in a Lumos Networks area, check them out. It's awesome internet service. In fact, we got too many TVs. In one way of speaking, I've got a friend who's got three teenage kids, and they come over and watch wrestling. And one of his kids said once, "Dad, would you have this many TVs if you didn't have kids?" And the answer probably yes, right? But we've even got a TV set up on our back porch. The folks there wired it for us. I mean, it's just awesome stuff. And great internet, too. Hey, honestly, we've had the Lumos internet for a couple of years, and it's 10 times faster than anything else out there. So there's my free pitch for Lumos Networks. I'll do now a free pitch for YouTube TV. In the meantime, so last Tuesday I called to get Lumos set up. They can't come until the next Tuesday. I'm like, what am I going to do? I want to watch some football this weekend on ACC Network. And so YouTube TV we tried. 5-day free trial. Of course, I've canceled it because I don't need it anymore because I've got the Lumos. Because YouTube TV, the one thing it doesn't offer, if you're a Nats or O's fan, you can't get the Nats or O's. Masson doesn't make itself available through YouTube TV. It doesn't make itself available through a lot of things, honestly. But the YouTube TV's got everything else. You get the Weather Channel. You can get your ESPN channels. All your basic cable. You can get some premium cable. You can get the MLB TV package. And you can get ACC Network. And so we were able to watch ACC Network. And I will tell you, when I started using the YouTube TV, I'm thinking, it's going to be spotty. It's going to hit or miss. You know, how good is a live streaming going to be? I mean, it's one thing to download a cat video. And this YouTube TV is not YouTube. But, you know, the idea, though, when you have the brand name YouTube part of the service, you know, it's one thing to download or watch something that's uploaded to a server, 5-minute video. It's another thing to watch a game, because a game is live streaming. So how's that going to work? No issues whatsoever. Now, of course, you have to have good internet. And we had the Lumos internet. You have to have good internet. But once you have your good internet, boy, the YouTube TV was seamless. I didn't notice a difference. So For those out there who don't live in a Lumos area, and you don't think, and I made this wager, that Comcast is going to, you know, give up anytime soon and just give in and offer, you know, and make a deal with ESPN over ACC Network and pay those costs, and of course pass those costs. Well, and that's the thing that frustrates you about it. When these networks are posturing, and the cable carriers are posturing, in the end, ESPN is going to get money from the cable providers, the satellite providers, and then they're going to pass those costs on to us. They're not eating those costs. It makes no sense. Just jump on. Let me pay the money for it. I'll give you whatever you want me to give you for it. Not whatever, but I'll give you money for it. And the posturing can cease. But that said, Comcast lost a $3,300 a year customer in me. And I'm glad. You know, if they're going to be that stubborn, I'll be stubborn too. And I have found again that in my case, my competitive offering, the Lumos, is a lot better than Comcast. So thank you, Comcast, for, you know, giving me that money back. It's a lot less expensive too, to be honest. You know, we were paying for the Lumos internet because it's better, and we were also paying for Xfinity internet because we wanted a backup just in case Lumos went down for some reason, and we were paying for Comcast cable because of the bundle. So we were paying, and when you added it all up, close to $400 a month for two internets and then for the cable. And that's going to go down. It's around $250 a month or so. So, you know, I'm not rich or anything like that. $150 a month. What? That's $1,800 a year. That's a lot of different things I can do with money. And so, thank you, Comcast, for giving me that option. So I'm definitely, you know, and I'm a YouTube. I would tell you if YouTube TV offered the Masson channels, you know, I might consider it. It's $50, $49.95 a month. I would definitely consider that if that was something that was out there. So those are two solutions that I would recommend. The one solution is localized, the other is anywhere. I'll say I don't know that Comcast is anywhere close to negotiations on this. My wife called yesterday after we got the cable set up with Lumos to tell the Comcast folks that we were switching, and they tried to talk us out of it. Said, "Oh, but you know that you can get a lot of ACC games on ESPN, right?" And actually, that's a message that is given to by Comcast on its website. You know, the bullet points include, "Oh, a lot of the ACC games are still on ESPN." Do you think I'd be calling and telling you I've switched if the games I wanted to watch were on ESPN? This past weekend, there were three ACC games, three actual ACC games involving teams on both sides being ACC teams. Clemson, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Boston College, Virginia Pitt. They were all on the ACC network. They were not on ESPN. If you're a UVA football fan, a lot of UVA football fans listen to this podcast. If you're a UVA football fan, the first three games involving your team are ACC network. So, no, we're not idiots. My wife wanted to say, bullshit, she said. She held her tongue, but she wanted to tell them that, no, we're not dumb, and stop insinuating that we are. So there we go, ACC Network. So I promise I want to talk about some UVA sports, and I've got a lot of columns on, you know, kind of previewing this week's game, UVA football, with Wayne McMary. But I have to talk first. We're recording this podcast about an hour before the first pitch of the Wednesday series finale between the Mets and the Nats. Last night, Tuesday night, I saw this stat, so I can't claim that I authored it myself, but I saw this stat last night. MLB teams with a 6-run lead in the ninth going into last night in 2019, 274-0. And the Mets lost last night to the Nats. And the Nats, I mean, you know, they didn't deserve to win this game, except for the fact that they had that massive rally, 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth. It was a game that, you know, for watching this team every night, you know, we keep talking about how good this team is. I think the record now is 78-59, so 19 games over 500. They were once 12 games under, so they've been 31 over since May 24th. So we're talking over 3 months now. And for 3 months, you've not seen the Nats play a game the way they played last night. The final score was 11-10, first off. It was Max Scherzer versus Jacob DeGrom. Yeah, sure, that's going to be an 11-10 game, right? Scherzer has a no-hitter into the fourth, if you want to call it. He's not giving up a hit into the fourth inning. You don't say he's got a no-hitter until it's probably the sixth, at least. but no hits given up until the fourth, and then the Mets score four. It was almost like he was tipping his pitches. You know, F.P. Santangelo kind of, you know, he said, it's like they know it's coming. You know, I'm not perceptive enough to notice what the tip might be, and I think you probably have to be in the batter's box and also be a professional hitter to kind of see exactly what the situation might be there. But you know, they were sitting on off-speed pitches, and every time he threw one in that fourth inning, hitting it. So there had to be something going on there where they figured something out. And Scherzer ends up going six, gives up the four runs. He leaves with a four-run deficit. The Nats make it 4-2 in the bottom of the sixth. And then a head-scratching play. Long fly ball off the bat. I think it was as Drubal Cabrera. Let me make sure of this because I've got the game story, which I'll tell you about in a second. Kurt Suzuki's name will come up later on. So Suzuki, long fly ball, left center field, runners on first and second, and one down in the inning. And for some reason, Matt Adams runs back to first base to tag up on a fly ball to left center field. I'm not even sure if the guy at second should be tagging up, and in fact, he wasn't. But the guy, Matt Adams at first base is not going to tag up and go to second on a fly ball anywhere. He's not going to do that. So what got into his head to make him think, I got to go tag up? You know, you run halfway down. If they catch it, you run back. You're not going to get to second on a fly ball to the outfield. You're Matt Adams. So when he does that, he keeps Suzuki to a single. He's at second, and then the inning ends with a ground ball double play. And so, you know, a ground ball with runners on second and third, you might score a run. The Mets aren't going to play infield in, so it might be 4-3. Instead, you leave the inning down 4-2. Jeff McNeil homers off Reynes Elias in the top of the eighth to extend the lead to 5-2. Juan Soto hits a two-run homer in the bottom of the eighth, makes it 5-4. So now you're thinking, man, so we screwed away a run in the sixth because of stupid base running. You know, a reliever comes in, gives up a homer, and now we hit a two-run homer. At worst, we should be tied now. We're down 5-4. Elias gives up another solo homer, Brandon Nimmo in the ninth. And then with one out, runners on first and second. And Daniel Hudson's in the game now, trying to clean up this mess. Runs off first, like ground ball off the bat of the catcher. The backup catcher, Thomas Nito, hits a weak ground ball to shortstop. And Bob Carpenter on the broadcast is saying, there's your inning double play. And Trey Turner lobs the ball to first base and runs off the field, or tries to run off the field. He thinks there were two outs in the inning. He doesn't flip or run to the bag to get the out. He throws to first base, and now it's two outs, runners on second and third. Naturally, what happens next? Two-run single by Jeff McNeil, and then the next batter, Pete Alonso, absolutely he hit the ball off the moon. It was hit so hard in left center field. 10-4 all of a sudden. So just like that, I mean, within a span of – so you get the inning double play. The two-run single and then a home run, I think a span of five or six pitches. The game went from 6-4 to 10-4. So I'll be honest, I leave my perch. I'm covering the game from home, as I often do, Nats games. And so I leave the living room of where I was watching the game, and I go to my office, and I'm starting to write this story. Because, you know, there's a thing in journalism, sports journalism particularly, and it's a habit that I've got from having actually worked for a print newspaper that, you know, it's long since gone away, the need to worry about deadlines. But instinct kicks in, you know, kind of like how, why are we scared of snakes? Oh, it's just instinct from 10,000 years ago. Okay, so instinct kicks in. It's time for me to go write the story. The score's 10-4. The game's over. I'm even thinking maybe I'll just turn on Boomerang and watch some, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoons or something, and then wait for the final score to come in. No, I'll sit here and watch it. I'll keep it on while the game's going on. So I write the story. In fact, I've got the lead. Matt Adams tagged up on a double to left center. Trey Turner turned an inning double play grounder to a five-run ninth for the Mets. Such was the night for the Washington Nationals in a 10-4 loss in the New York Mets. Well, then the inning starts happening. RBI double by Turner scores a run. It's 10-5. And at this point, you're thinking, all right, it's 10-5. That's awesome. But still, you need base runners. RBI single, Anthony Rendon. So now it's 10-6. But you got two runners on base. It's 10-6. Boy, you might get close. A walk to Juan Soto. The bases are loaded. It's 10-6. Still just one out. And all of a sudden, it's interesting. I mean, the crowd's hyped. The people who were still there. Honestly, if I was in D.C. I would have already been in a Uber on my way back to my hotel. I'm not lying when I say that. The way that game played out, the mental mistakes, the fact that Scherzer got hit hard, you know, that whole if I'd stayed, I would have stayed for the ninth inning. It was a close game. It was 5-4. But the way that ninth inning played out, man, oh man, oh man. Nobody's faulted for having left that game, in my opinion. Nobody's faulted. We're all people. It's late. It was past 10 o'clock, getting past 10 o'clock. Okay, so it's 10-6 now. Base is loaded. And the Nats send up Ryan Zimmerman to pinch hit. It's a screamer that slices in the gap right center field, and two runs score. So now it's 10-8. And runners on second and third, still just the one out. And, you know, I'm not sure that even then you're thinking that, you know, it's actually going to happen. Edwin Diaz, the Mets closer, who's beleaguered. He's had 25 saves. He's now blown six. ERA going into last night of around 5.5. So, you know, he saved a lot of games. He obviously, and I'm thinking, you know, without having watched him pitch every game, a guy with 25 saves and a 5-something ERA, maybe one or two bad outings. You know, they can throw a relief pitcher's numbers off. He hits 100 on the radar gun several times in his brief performance. It gets ahead of Suzuki 0-1. Suzuki very aggressive, swings at a slider. 3-1 then the count. The 3-1 pitch, another slider out of the zone. So he's not thrown a pitch in the zone yet, and he's got a 3-2 count. Suzuki fouls off a couple of 100-mile-an-hour heaters, and then he gets a slider in the low 90s. So a slider in the low 90s, speeds his bat up, skulls it to left field. Game's over as soon as the ball leaves the bat. There's no question about it. You know, and you look at the scoreboard, the Braves had already won. The Nats lost Monday, and the Braves had won. So you're down 6.5. You know, you should be 7.5 back. The race probably ends. I mean, it's teetering as it is. 6.5 back. Nats have 25 to go. Race is teetering as it is. I mean, you got the first wild card probably sewn up, but you don't want to play in the wild card. It's a one game, one off. You know, against somebody like the Cubs or the Phillies. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't want a one game. You want to figure out a way to make up 6.5 games in your last 25. Obviously, 7.5 is even tougher. You got 7 with the Braves coming up the next 2 weeks, but you know you can't keep falling behind. And so that's a team that's the analogy is a boxer knocked on the deck, and the ref standing over. The count is 6, and you do a kip up. I mean, that's the only thing you can say this was, and keep the fight going. That's what the, you know, what is it? Keep the fight going, or whatever. They have a phrase for the month of September for selling the tickets to the home games is like stay in the fight. I think it is keeping the fight. They kept in the fight. So, but I posted. So what I did, I interjected a couple spots, editor's notes, but I basically posted the story that I had written about how the Nats lost the game, and they just added in their two references how they actually won the game. So. That's the trick. Sports writers are doing this. When we're at a night game, basketball season especially, because most basketball games are night games, weeknight games certainly are, night football. We're watching the game in the first half. We're watching the game for the first half of the second half really closely, and then as you creep closer and closer to deadline, because even now on the internet, I mean, honestly, even though we don't have the print deadlines, or I don't, some of the writers still have both deadlines, print and web deadline. I know that at 10 o'clock, a lot of you folks are heading to bed. So if I don't crank out something real quick, you're not going to see it the next morning, and you might get it from somewhere else. So we're all cranking out stuff, and I cranked it out. I think the third story of this nature I've posted in my years at AFP. There was the other two were UVA basketball games. The Wake Forest game from a few years ago, Malcolm Brogdon was still at UVA. Darius Thompson banked the three-pointer in. UVA was down 14 with less than 2 minutes to go and came back to win in regulation on a banked in three. And then the Louisville game from a year and a half ago, that the another banked in three by DeAndre Hunter, whose were down big. What was it? 4 points with less than a second to go, and 10 points with about a minute and a half to go. So I had already done the same thing there. I'd already written sort of stories, and then, okay, let's just post it. Let people read what could have been history, right? So I had a professor at UVA, Clifton McCluskey, who insisted that newspapers were the first draft of history. So there you go. That's the first draft of history. The second draft was better because the teams that I root for won. Let's talk some UVA football now. We're 20 minutes into the podcast, and we're finally getting around to some of the topics regarding this week's game, UVA and William & Mary. First off, I'd go into the I wrote a piece. Bronco Mendenhall was asked at his presser his thoughts on relationship with Mike Lennon, his predecessor. And, of course, this is the unique thing. Mike Lennon coming back to Charlottesville. He's the coach at William & Mary now, first-year coach at William & Mary. After a stint at Howard, he was at Maryland on the staff there as an assistant for a brief time. And Mike Lennon coming back to Charlottesville. And they coached against each other before. Bronco was at BYU and, of course, Lennon at UVA. And they split. Actually, the 2-10 team from 2013, somehow Virginia beat BYU, a bowl team that year, won 9 games that year. And then BYU got revenge out in Provo in 2014. Coach Mendenhall was asked about whatever contacts they've had, relationship, etc. Pretty much none. He said he didn't talk to him. Bronco did not talk to Mike Lennon after Lennon was let go. Before Bronco took over UVA, they didn't really talk in between. The one conversation he said that had any bit of extensiveness to it would have involved the hiring by Lennon of Matt Johns, a former UVA quarterback, who was a grad assistant at UVA last year. I'm guessing the way it was portrayed, Lennon reached out to Bronco to get some thoughts on Matt Johns as an assistant coach. So that's it. And when you watch the press conference, like when you read the quotes, it's one thing. You watch the press, the body language wasn't great. It seemed a little uncomfortable. So I titled this story, "Why Can't We Be Friends?" Bronco also expressing he doesn't really, again, body language being an issue here, not a big fan of the stadium fan experience enhancements announced by UVA last week, at least one of them, the beer. It'll be a big revenue producer eventually for UVA, the beer gardens, and that kind of thing. But Bronco, a non-alcoholic drinker, says, nah. Have no control over it, and he insisted that his control is over his team. So he had no insight or input, I guess, into the process. And that is that as far as that goes. Let's talk some offensive line news for UVA football. The 2-deep is still the same if you just look at the names on the 2-deep. The 5 positions, 2 guys, the same 10 guys are listed for week 2 as were for week 1. But there are some changes, just some kind of musical chairs, I called it. Ryan Nelson moving from left tackle to left guard. Chris Glazer moving from left guard to right guard. Ryan Svoboda moving from right tackle to left tackle. So just kind of musical chairs. And Mendenhall said he's still looking for like the right gel, if you want to say, continuity. And he's wanting still a bit of competition. He said competition is competition, outcome is outcome. We're in a performance-related business, so we're trying to build young people and their skill set in a unit and build a team all at the same time. He said, particularly moving Nelson to guard, moving from tackle to guard, he's looking for the most physical front they could put out there, and he thought moving Ryan Nelson to guard could give, could allow for that to be the case. It's interesting. Tackles have to be a little more light on their feet to be able to protect from the edge rushers. Whether they be defensive ends or defensive or linebackers, guards have to be a little more punishing. They're in the middle of the line. They've got to, run plays, and they have to surge forward and on pass plays. They have to sort of, form the core of that pocket. And so, they're different positions. But he felt like that gives Virginia the more physical advantage there. I point out that there is room for growth. Last week, Virginia ran for 129 yards, 33 attempts. Bryce Perkins, who averaged 71 yards per game, had just 44 yards on 18 attempts, and that includes sack yardage. He lost 18 yards on 3 sacks, but even if you had factored that out, 15 runs for 62 yards, and one of those was the bulk of that was a 27-yard scramble, not a designed run play. So you know, I'm really now I'm kind of breaking things down. That's 14 attempts, 35 yards. I mean, his average carry outside of that one scramble was a 2 yard carry. Virginia averaged 173 yards a game last year, ran for 129 against Pitt. Pitt's a good team. But that does suggest that there is some room for improvement. That's why even though the names are still pretty much the same, you're seeing some movement, trying to get the right mix there on the offensive front. And Mendenhall talking about William & Mary and what they offer as a challenge offensively. William & Mary last week, 37-17, went over Lafayette. And yes, William & Mary picked at the bottom of the CAA. Lafayette is another FCS team. But William & Mary scored 24 points in the third quarter. And what's interesting about this team is that London, and UVA fans will remember this, he likes quarterback rotations to his detriment. That's why he's not the UVA coach anymore. But he used a rotation. True freshman quarterback Hollis Mathis and a senior quarterback, Kilton Anderson, sometimes subbing play for play on series. And Hollis Mathis got most of the snaps. He threw 13 passes, ran the ball 16 times. But when you look at the play-by-play, again, they were interchanged quite a bit. I think the big advantage for Mathis was he had a couple of long drives and as a result got more snaps. But and the challenge then is they're different quarterbacks. Anderson is a more drop-back guy, got the big strong arm, 6'2 guy, and he's also a senior, so he's been around for a while. Mathis being a true freshman, he can't know the playbook yet, but he ran for 127 yards on 16 attempts, and it presents a challenge. He's, you know, that's more like, as Mendenhall said, you know, looking at some highlights from William & Mary last week, it's not quite a triple option, but there are elements. I mean, I've heard this said, you know, there's really subtle differences in some ways between a triple option team, think Georgia Tech the last few years until this year, and a spread team. You know, triple option, the main difference is triple option teams actually put the quarterback under center, but, you know, you think about spread, they may have receivers, you know, you may have four receivers in a formation and one running back, and you have a shotgun or a pistol, but a lot of those really successful teams pit the last few years running a spread. They would run a spread, and their wide receivers would get as many carries some games as their running backs would because of all the action. They would, and UVA's used some of these plays. Didn't last week against Pitt. Probably won't against William & Mary this weekend, but you've seen UVA put a guy in motion. For example, last year, Olamide Zaccheaus would run in motion, and then Bryce Perkins, a quarterback, would take a shotgun snap, maybe fake a handoff to Jordan Ellis like he did last year, kind of a dive, and then kind of bootleg out, triple option out with Zaccheaus following behind. And so there are elements of that, and William & Mary uses this. And it's something that a true freshman quarterback with athleticism, he doesn't need to know the whole playbook, doesn't need to know the pass route tree, etc. You just say, hey, kid, go out there and be athletic as hell. And Bronco Mendenhall's talking about how difficult this is going to be. This is probably the only team that Virginia will face this year that runs anything like this in terms of an offense. In offensive sets. So, and you've only got a week to prepare. Actually, less than a week to prepare because it's a short week. We play Friday night because of the ACC network. So, yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, you know, don't overlook the fact that if you're out there watching, if you're in Scott Stadium Friday night, or if you're watching on the ACC network on YouTube TV or Lumos or wherever you are, William & Mary might move the ball early, especially as Virginia's kind of figuring out how to play this unconventional offense. So don't overlook that. I mean, and we don't have to be told as UVA football fans that FCS teams can jump up and kick you in the ass. Richmond, the first game of the Bronco era back in 2016, William & Mary back in 2009, the beginning of the end of the Al Groh era. So we know it can happen. And respect the opponent here would be the message from Chris Graham as you think through this game coming up. Just in a couple of days. It's only Wednesday. It already feels like Thursday to me because that game is Friday night this week. I should point out or mention or hype myself and Jerry Ratcliffe. So the game is Friday night at 7:30 in Scott Stadium in Charlottesville. But from 4 to 6, if you're in town early, and if you're not, but you could be, here's a reason to get there early. UVA Bookstore is hosting Jerry Ratcliffe and myself for a book signing for our book, Team of Destiny, Inside Virginia Basketball's Run of the 2019 National Championship. We will be there from 4 to 6. They've got plenty of copies. I had to deliver the copies. That's the thing about being a small publisher. You know, we're the publishers as well. So Augusta Reed Press published the book that Jerry and I wrote. I delivered the books. I delivered three big boxes full of them to the UVA bookstore just late last week. So they'll have plenty of books to sell. Jerry and I will be there to sign, personalized messages as the case may be, chat with folks. Love to hear from you and say hi, that kind of thing. From 4 to 6 at the UVA bookstore. And it's an honor for me, I got to tell you. I've seen the book on a shelf there because when I delivered the books last time, I walked around a little bit afterwards and found the book on the shelf. So as a person who was a student at UVA for 4 years, graduated in 1994, 25 years ago, I kind of put myself in a place of, could I have foreseen when I – and I did, I'll be honest – that when I was there, that one day I'd have a book for sale on the shelf. Among the reasons I would not have foreseen it was I did not foresee myself becoming a writer. I went to UVA to become a civil rights attorney before reality hit in the form of economics. I fell into, very fortunately for me, I fell into journalism, and I'm so happy. And I think I'm good at what I do somewhat, some days. And so, yeah, it's going to be – so to see my book on a shelf and then to be sitting there in the bookstore, I mean, it looks different now. It's probably even – physically, in fact, it is in a different physical place than the UVA bookstore that I remember buying books from. That was in Newcomb Hall, and this is now a building outside of Newcomb Hall atop the parking garage. It was not there when I was a student there. But so it's not the actual physical place that I remember, but it's across from the pavilion where we used to eat all the time, and it's the UVA bookstore. So for me, it's going to be awesome to be to have a book signing. I'm still a kid. I hope it, you know, if it doesn't portray in my voice. I'm a 47-year-old kid, and I don't underestimate how cool these experiences that I get to have are. So, anyway, 4 to 6 Friday before the game. Love to hear from you. Love to have you come out and buy a book. It's a UVA bookstore. You could probably. As the crow flies, if you're tailgating in Scott Stadium, or you're going to tailgate in Scott Stadium, park in your spot. Not that long of a walk, you know, maybe half mile. I haven't MapQuested it out, or MapQuest, that's old time. Google Maps it out to see. But of course, I'm a distance runner, so I'm going to tell you it's not that far, and I'm probably lying to you, but it's not that far. And come on over, we'd love to engage. So I got you ready for some UVA football. I talked some Nats baseball. Ryan Zimmerman had a role in that. He had the two-run double in the ninth, set up a three-run homer by Kurt Suzuki. So there's some UVA baseball there. I've got you ready for ACC Network. I've given you a couple options on ACC Network. And let's see, what else? What else did I talk about? I talked about something else earlier. Anyway, hey, enjoy your day. Thank you for your time, and we'll talk again soon. In the meantime, wahoo-wah.